Hello, Brian Mackey here. I wanted to mention that this week's episode was recorded before some news that broke. So we discuss State Senator Martin Sandoval. There was an unredacted copy of the search warrant that federal investigators used to obtain access to his Capitol office. In the discussion, we comment on the fact that more people had called on him to resign as chairman of the Senate Transportation Committee, but that he had not done so, and Senate President Cullerton had still not removed him. Well, after we recorded the show, after it went to air the first time, news broke that Senator Sandoval had indeed submitted his resignation as chairman of the Senate Transportation Committee. So that happened. It's not reflected in the conversation. I'm sure we will continue following this issue in the weeks ahead. Thanks for listening, and on with the show.
From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
Fleeing Illinois. You've likely heard the grim numbers. Illinois' population is shrinking.
According to the Census Bureau, the population of Illinois has declined for the fifth straight year.
For the first time since the late 1980s, Illinois' population is shrinking.
The latest U.S. Census Bureau data shows that Chicago is still the nation's third largest city with just over 2.7 million residents. But the city's population is actually down more than 7,000 people between 2017 and 2018.
As the office that will be paying the checks for the $45 billion capital plan, we want to make sure we're doing everything within our power to vet every single one of those and make sure that they are 100% on the up and up and legitimate. I think everybody that serves in this dome and outside looking in should be very concerned about these allegations, and he should do the right thing and step aside.
That's the state controller, Susana Mendoza. She's the latest to call for Senator Martin Sandoval to step down from a powerful legislative committee chairmanship. Sandoval has been a target of a federal investigation. Some new information this morning on that as well. We'll have details. And then also, we want to talk later about a new survey that has come out. It finds out how people feel about the direction of the state and how some have considered leaving Illinois. We'll talk about that and a whole lot more this week on State Week. In Springfield, I'm Sean Crawford, and with me in studios of NPR Illinois on the campus of the University of Illinois Springfield is Charlie Wheeler. He's the retired director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at UIS and a longtime State House reporter and observer. Also with us in studio is the IPR State House editor Brian Mackey. And joining us on the line from Chicago and the Chicago Tribune, we have reporter Cecilia Reyes. And Cecilia, welcome to State Week.
Thank you so much for having me.
I mentioned there was some breaking news as we sat down to record here about midday on Friday, Brian. And we talked about that federal investigation, raids on Senator Martin Sandoval's offices and home, some other locations. Earlier, the Illinois Senate put out a redacted copy of the search warrant that told what the feds might be looking for. Well, we didn't get a lot of detail from that. Now they have put out the unredacted copy. What do we know?
Yeah, and we know some of this stuff already because there has been reporting by various news outlets, including the Tribune and others, about some of the additional raids that took place after Senator Sandoval's home and government offices were raided. And we know from this warrant now, and like I said, other reporting, that this is a pretty broad-based investigation. Federal investigators were looking for any items related to suburban mayor Jeff Tobolsky, for example, SafeSpeed, which is a red light camera company. There was a collision repair company they were looking for information for. A number of companies and businesses owned by Senator Sandoval. As well as that, one of the new things I think we're learning here is that Gold Rush Amusements and Gold Rush Gaming, which is one of the big video gaming operators, was named in the warrant. Now, I should specify that just because your name or business pops up in a search warrant, you have not been charged with a crime, and no one in this case, as far as we know, has been charged with a crime. But these are just some of the things that the federal government, in the seven violations of federal law that they alleged in order to obtain this search warrant, that somehow they are looking for evidence related to those crimes involving these individuals and companies that I named, as well as Senator Sandoval. And then at the end of the document, a name pops up that we've also seen a lot in the news lately, and that is ComEd and Exelon, the big energy. Exelon's the big energy generator. They own nuclear power plants. ComEd is the big power utility in the Chicago area, northern Illinois. And they have been in the news for federal investigations, and now this is the second time this year. The first time was related to House Speaker Michael Madigan, some of his associates at least, and some lobbyists who were helping out a former aide to the speaker with some work, apparently. And then this time they're popping up in the context of this investigation. Like I said, still just an investigation. No one has been indicted yet, but this is late breaking information as we go to air on Friday.
And I don't want to put you on the spot, Brian, but I mean, there's going to be people who are wondering, are these all related? I mean, Commonwealth Edison, Exelon being mentioned in these different investigations, supposedly, is it, you know, one big investigation or these separate things? Do we not know at this point?
Yeah, I don't think we know that. It certainly would be tempting to draw that connection, and there's also the fact that House Speaker Michael Madigan's district lies entirely within Senator Sandoval's district, but I don't think we can make that connection right now. And I will also say that in talking to lobbyists, there is this thought out there that some of them are surprised that the federal investigators had not taken a closer look at Senator Sandoval earlier. And again, he has not been charged with a crime, but I think that is something that should be kept separately from any investigations and questions about the speaker's office for now, based on what we know now.
And Martin Sandoval, the state senator from Chicago, he played a key role in getting this massive public works program pushed through in the spring, one that we saw the gas tax, some other taxes raised to pay for. Charlie, we've been hearing different people talking about the need for him to at least step aside from his committee chairmanship. They've also called for the Senate President John Cullerton to take such action. You, on last week's show, had mentioned how you think it would be prudent to get him off of there, at least right now, with these big projects waiting in the wings.
Yeah, and I still feel that way, and I don't think anything that we've heard would lead one to conclude, oh, no, there's no reason, there's no worry, there's no reason for him to step aside. As a matter of fact, if I'm not mistaken, State Comptroller Susana Mendoza suggested or said that he should step aside, and that if he doesn't, Senator Cullerton should oust him from position as head of the Transportation Committee. And the difficulty is, without alleging anything against Sandoval in terms of any criminal activity, you have the what I guess today we call the optics of it. It doesn't look good when the person who is one of the main drivers of the transportation and infrastructure building program that the legislature enacted this spring is suddenly under federal scrutiny, because there are folks out there who would like nothing better than to use the program itself as political ammunition against the people who voted for it. You see these advertisements and you see stuff on social media about how we should not have raised these taxes and people are paying more for gas tax and how terrible is that. Well, I think that's short-sighted, and as I've said before, I fully support the idea that we have to pay for infrastructure. And so I think it doesn't help the cause of people like myself who try and argue that, yes, we do need to invest in our roads and our bridges and our public buildings, when you have this kind of cloud over the issue that allows the opponents to distract from what I think is the main issue. So, yeah, I still think Senator Sandoval should do the right thing, I'd say, and step aside.
And Brian, before we move on, and we will move on here, but I give you kind of the last word on this, because you did talk to Mendoza earlier this week. She followed the lead of Governor J.B. Pritzker, who's also come out, and both of them have said that it's time for a change there, at least temporarily, while everything gets sorted out. But nothing has occurred, you know, on Sandoval's part or on John Cullerton's part.
No, that's right. A number of other reporters this week have talked to a lot of senators, state senators, and there seem to be a number of different camps, if you will. There are those who say, this is a huge cloud. We don't need this distraction. He should step aside. There are those who say, he should step aside or be removed if he doesn't. There are those who say he should step aside of his own accord and do the right thing. But then there are others who say, and this so far seems to be what Senate President Cullerton is saying, is that, I'm not going to move him aside yet. And then I thought there was an interesting argument from the standpoint of a consistent philosophical view. State Senator Kim Lightford, who herself is a member of leadership, a very high-ranking Democrat in the Senate, she said, "I don't believe anyone accused of a crime should be denied, you know, their rights or their standing, you know, because they're just, you know," and again, she has people we've pointed out, he has not even been accused of a crime. There's just this cloud of suspicion and investigation. I think some people would say that public officials ought to be held to a higher standard. And we're not talking about, you know, jailing him or anything like that. This is losing a chairmanship is what people are calling for. But there are these varying views even among his colleagues. It'll be interesting to see how veto session goes when all the senators are back in one place again.
Yeah. And so with veto session just a couple of weeks away to begin, we're going to not hear the end of this. We know and we'll continue to follow what's going on there. Let's move on to some survey results that were released this week. This was an NPR Illinois survey and University of Illinois Springfield survey that was released, and it was conducted back in September. Over 1,000 registered voters in the state found some interesting things in there. Governor J.B. Pritzker got a little bit of a gauge on his approval rating. We'll talk about that in a moment. But one of the interesting conversations that the pollster had with the people who were responding was regarding people moving out of state. About 60%, 3 out of 5, saying they had considered leaving the state of Illinois. And we do have as our guest this week Cecilia Reyes with the Chicago Tribune. Cecilia, you've been following what I guess you've called, what some other people have called, the Illinois exodus, people leaving the state of Illinois. Does that 60% figure sound about accurate as far as people not happy and thinking they might want to go somewhere else?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I mean, it's a different, difficult thing to measure. And the thing that we did look at was people who had made that jump, you know, who actually had moved out from Illinois and were reporting a different residence on the census, which is how we were able to know more characteristics about their race, their age, their income. But just anecdotally, I mean, when we started working on this series and trying to go deep on this Illinois exodus, there was no shortage of people who were, you know, from the sounds of it, about to leave. You know, it was a lot of people saying that, you know, this was the last straw, or they had been thinking about it for a long time. But in fact, one of the people that we actually talked to for the story, who was great to speak with, and my colleague who also worked on the story spoke with him, he still hasn't left Illinois. I mean, he even wrote a song about wanting to leave Illinois, but he's still here. And I think one of the things that this survey, your survey, and this point out is that it's, when it comes to it, it's a very personal decision, and it's very much weighed by other factors. Is there a job? Do you have the means to move?
I appreciated the way I'm not the pollster myself, but I appreciated the way the person who designed this survey included some questions. So it's easy, you know, 3 out of 5 people say, "Have you thought about leaving Illinois?" And I don't know. I mean, that's a pretty broad based thing. Could, you know, you get a travel catalog and you think, "Yeah, okay, I'll think about it." But how serious are you about it? And so they added these questions to try and press them, right? How many people have actually looked at a job in a new state? And for that, it was just 16% of the respondents. And then you say, even take it even further, how many have applied for a job in a new state? And that's just 5%. And that's just of the people who said they had considered leaving. So at that point, you're getting to a really small share of the survey respondents who, you know, it's one thing to say you think about leaving, or, oh, if they raise taxes again, I'm out of here. Much like I think we've heard with every presidential election, it seems to be a popular thing to say, oh, if so-and-so wins, I'm moving to Canada, or if so-and-so wins, I'm going to Mexico, whatever people say. It's become easy to say that, but do people actually follow through on it? Well, I don't actually know anyone who's left.
You know, and that's a good point, too, because that occurred to me when I saw 60% considered leaving. What does consider mean? I look at myself. I'm retired now, as we know from the beginning of the show. And my daughter says, "We should, now that you're retired, we should move to Ireland." Or I say to myself, I really enjoyed living in Panama in the Peace Corps. I should move back down to Panama because there's no winter, you know, but I'm not going to do that. But did I consider it?
I guess you've considered it, yes.
Well, I thought what's interesting, too, in your reporting, Cecilia, was that it looked at out-migration, people leaving the state of Illinois, and really we weren't that far off the mark from a lot of other states, but it was the fact we're not drawing in residents. That seems to be the big problem for Illinois.
Right, yeah. So for the last year that we have available, 2017, Illinois was fairly middle of the pack when it came to this out-migration rate. So that's the number of people who are leaving to other states relative to the population, the size of the state. When you look at this in-migration ratio, so people who are coming into Illinois from other states, we're really close to the bottom of the pack. And that's something that I think is kind of lost, even when reporting out the census numbers, because since there's a population loss and there's this negative net migration, I think people automatically assume that it's everybody just leaving in droves. But there are two sides to that equation. In order for you to get at, you know, what's the change migration-wise, you have to do how many people come in minus how many people leave. And this how many people are coming in has been on the decline since 2013. So we're just not getting as many people as we used to offset the number of people who are leaving the state, as well as the number of people who are just dying, to put it that way.
Well, and most of the population being in the Chicago area, not surprising you're seeing the biggest population loss in raw numbers there, but I think it was also mentioned that when you start looking at percentage of population, rural areas, I mean, I think it was the Carbondale area, Western Illinois, some of these areas, they're the ones really losing the bigger percentage of their population too. So this is not just people are fed up with Chicago and the problems that the city might have and the taxes there, whatever. This is happening even at a higher percentage in these smaller rural downstate areas.
Right. So it's not even just the percentage of population loss. It's really the percentage of people who were moving out of the state of Illinois. So those really high percentages of people saying, you know, I'm going to leave the state outright were, like you said, concentrated not in the Chicago region, but in areas near Iowa, for example, or downstate, close to St. Louis, even the county that has Carbondale as its seat, those areas, we were a little bit surprised when we realized that it wasn't all happening around Chicago and the collar counties.
Is that a bigger problem, Brian, you think, for the state of Illinois? It's not, you know, I think Chicago can be a bit of a punching bag at times, and it has a lot of issues, financial and otherwise, that are going on there. You know, the crime rate people talk about. But when you see this as being a problem pretty much throughout the state of Illinois, you know, if I'm a J.B. Pritzker and some of the leaders of the state, I look at that and think this is a broader issue that we're going to have to try to address somehow, some way.
Yeah, well, I mean, you do have this idea out there. I think that there are two Illinois. You have the Chicago the city proper and the surrounding areas, all the way out to the collar counties, which is a fairly prosperous, big driving economic force. And then you have the rest of Illinois, which if it didn't have the Chicago area would be a much lower ranking state in terms of obviously population, but also economic productivity and importance. I mean, it is an important agriculture producer still, but it is just there's not the economic engines downstate the way there used to be. You've seen a manufacturing decline for one, but then also our institutions of higher education, particularly not so much the University of Illinois in Urbana-Champaign, but some of the smaller regional institutions, which were at one time and still are to some extent big engines and anchors in their communities, Carbondale, Charleston for Eastern, Macomb for Western, because those universities have been allowed to decline somewhat in terms of state funding support, and we've seen their enrollment numbers drop, it has had a negative effect on downstate. I think that also partly explains why the Republican Party, from a political standpoint, this is a show about state government and politics, why they have taken smaller and smaller shares of the seats in the General Assembly. As that party becomes more rural and downstate oriented, it is losing its power in the state. And it, if it wants to sort of regain that, it would not need to make inroads in suburban areas or find a way to boost the population where, you know, where its base lives.
Well, I did want to also mention we had other questions in this survey, and one of those looked at the job J.B. Pritzker is doing. And to be honest, about 60%, Charlie, of those people who responded said that they think J.B. Pritzker is doing a pretty good job at this point. Now, he's only been in office a few months, but he has already taken some very, you know, what might consider controversial positions. He's backed some tax hikes. He's certainly come out pretty strong on abortion issues. Still, 60% is pretty strong.
Yeah, and I think what it shows is that he ran on a platform of doing stuff, and he's pretty much accomplished a lot of what he said he was running on. I mentioned earlier the infrastructure program, and look at the other issues that have been on the burner for a while, like legalization of marijuana, as an example.
Minimum wage increase.
Oh, he did that right off the bat. He did that within the first few weeks. Or the idea of having more gambling opportunities in the state of Illinois. And you look back at the things that happened in the first 6 months of his administration, and as I've said on the show before, I can't remember any other governor who's had such a monumental first 6 months. Mm-hmm. Maybe Dick Ogilvie 50-some years ago, but it's just amazing what got accomplished. Now, even if you disagree with all this stuff, I think you'd have to admit that it was pretty monumental to get it moved through.
And Brian, those numbers, when you break them down, he's even doing, I would say, fairly well with Republicans.
Yeah, I was so surprised by that. Republicans aren't huge fans of the governor, but he still has, you know, reasonable numbers. And what I think is most interesting about his particular approval numbers is the context of the other things people think about the state of Illinois. So Governor Pritzker, what did we say, had a 59% approval rating, but almost as many people think Illinois is on the wrong track. 56% of the respondents, which is nearly double the percentage of people who think Illinois is going in the right direction. You know, it's a classic polling question. Do you think the state's in the right direction or the wrong track? Double the number of people think we're on the wrong track. We also asked people to rate the Illinois economy. Just 23% said good or excellent. The vast majority, almost 80%, said the economy is either fair or poor. So you have pessimistic view about the direction of the state. You have a really pessimistic view about the status of our economy. And yet, maybe it's a honeymoon period, but they are not carrying those negative feelings over into what they think about Governor Pritzker.
And those negative feelings, Cecilia, that's basically what I think may drive, and I'll see if you agree with this, what drives that mentality of, you know, I'm considered leaving the state, whether you've taken any action to do so or not, just considering to do so when you feel like the economy's not turning around and you feel like the prospects are not too good.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's no overstating the role of narrative in this. One of the experts we talked about, not for this story, but for a previous one, because we've been covering this population trend or population numbers before, was saying that one of the things that could be reflecting our lackluster in migration rate had probably to do with how negative talk about Illinois is. Maybe even not, you know, overstating certain problems. Not to say that there aren't very real ones as well, but yeah, definitely the discourse plays a role in whether people think about leaving. What we do know about what people say after they've left, and this comes, we try to not make it be anecdotal as much as possible. We really wanted to get a lot of data into this as much as we could. So from what we know comes from this survey that the census does, and it partners with the Bureau of Labor Statistics and asks why you left the residence. And the top response for Illinois residents who had moved was had to do with a new job or a job transfer. So about one in three of moves that we were looking at since 2010 had to do with that very specific reason, I think. The other non-so-specific reasons that were on number two and three had to do with family and housing. And these were very broad categories that we don't know if they were hiding things like housing affordability, which is a problem for a number of people, or even just being able to afford property taxes. The survey doesn't talk about taxes directly.
Just a couple of minutes left here. And Brian, if you could fill us in, we're going to have plenty of time to talk about the graduated income tax in coming months because it's likely going to be up before voters next year. They'll be voting on that and there'll be a lot of discussion. But this survey also asked about that tax and that idea of Governor Pritzker's, which would, of course, raise on the top earners, raise the tax rate, would bring in more money, they believe, for the state of Illinois. The survey found pretty good support for that as well.
It did. 67% of the survey respondents said they would support, either somewhat support or strongly support the concept of a graduated income tax where people at the higher end of the income spectrum, people who make more money would pay a higher tax rate. People who make less money would pay a lower tax rate. It's unsurprisingly, since Governor Pritzker made this a centerpiece of both his campaign and his first 6 months in office, it's very popular among Democrats. But what I think is interesting is that it's even reasonably popular among Republicans. 49% of Republicans said they at least somewhat, if not enthusiastically, support the concept of a graduated income tax. A couple of notes on this. This is consistent with what other polls, the Simon Public Policy Institute at Carbondale, at SIU Carbondale, has found this support anywhere from the mid-60s to the low 70s going back a decade. And it's also something that we should add. This has to go before Illinois voters. That's why this is a pertinent question. Ultimately, 60% of the people who vote on this constitutional amendment question have to say yes in order to get it authorized and to have this change take place.
Let's move on to our notes from the field. And Charlie, let's go to you first.
Well, soon after he was inaugurated, Governor Pritzker appointed a task force to look at the feasibility of consolidating the pension plans for suburban and downstate police and firefighters. And the task force came up with its recommendation, and they suggested that if we were to consolidate the roughly 650 suburban and downstate police and fire pension plans into two new statewide systems, one for the police, one for the firefighters, we could generate as much as $1 million a day in additional returns for the funds. The notion being that if you have consolidated funds, you'd have more money to invest and you could therefore get a better return and you'd have less overhead for administrative fees if you had one large fund for each of these first responders that then would be managed independently.
All right, Cecilia.
Yeah, so this week, two of my colleagues here at the Tribune published a story about the tactics of 13th Ward campaign workers to essentially get a 19-year-old college student off the ballot for a race for alderman. So Marty Quinn is the incumbent alderman in this Chicago ward, and for those who don't know, as my colleagues write, he was essentially handpicked by House Speaker Mike Madigan for the position. So what caught my eye about this story wasn't just the old-school politics of going door-to-door and essentially shoving a paper in front of people so that they could sign and say that they were taking away their support for this newcomer. It's that the story actually concluded that only about 187 out of the more than 2,800 affidavits that they got corresponded to people who had even pledged their support to begin with. So it was a lot of people who were kind of getting harassed, if you will, in order to get this 19-year-old student off the ballot.
All right, that's all the time we have for this week on State Week. Our panel included Shirley Wheeler, Brian Mackey, and Cecilia Reyes with the Chicago Tribune. You can get a podcast of our show at nprillinois.org and production assistance for the program provided by Bob Meyer. I'm Sean Crawford.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capital by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.